That's
Oh,
right.
now we're official. That and then now that I have a grandson, so hanging out, I was going to be hanging out with him over the summer while he's out of preschool.
Nice. Like you, Leslie, I have grandkids.
Oh my, I have
Uh-oh.
one.
Lucky you. But I like seeing them and going to the park and parks and stuff. The flower water slides, they get to see that my body does still work and I can move around. So that's my favorite thing to do is.
I said my name. Sorry. My name is Elizabeth. One thing that I've been doing is I finally did cleaning my kitchen. Only my
Oh.
kitchen for the longest time I've been wanting to do that. And also I've been doing a lot of water, splashing water open thing with my kids and swimming lessons. So
Oh, nice. That's
it's been
good.
great.
Awesome.
Hi, everybody. Louise Solasco with Living Cully, and I like to read a book with like a towel or a blanket in the grass. And I spray a lot of lavender around it, like hand sanitizer lavender to get rid of the insects so that when an ant will crawl on me. But besides that, just laying in the shade. Yeah, it has to be in the shade too.
Nice.
But I'm like a vampire because I don't like direct sunlight in the summer, so I'm always either under the shade or inside. How about you, Cecilia?
I like to be outdoors. I'm an outdoorsy person, so I try to like either be outside in my little teeny yard, which is just in full bloom right now. It's not very big, but I kind of like made it to where it's like my little kind of my little hangout spot.
Your oasis.
Yeah, and if not, just like trying to every summer I try to go somewhere different that I haven't been. And I'm trying to make it to Joseph, Oregon for Chief Joseph Day this year, but I don't know if I'll get there. Thanks.
Hopefully.
But somewhere, I'll go somewhere that I haven't been before.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Catherine Hartinger, she, her pronouns, Prosper, Portland. I like gardening. I'm not good at gardening, but I like to just grow something new every year, see what happens. And so I'm doing potatoes this year, which I've never done before. So like stacking the dirt on
That's
them
so
as they
fun.
grow. And so that's been super fun. I don't know if it'll hold, but we'll see in a few months. Awesome.
Nice.
Do we just decide? Do you want to share with us what's your favorite summer activity?
Evening, everybody. Sky Waters. And for me, it's anything active outside, so hiking, backpacking, sand volleyball, tennis, you name it, and yeah, I'd love to do it. Just getting the body moving and being outside.
Awesome.
Nice.
Thank you. Welcome. My favorite summer activity is definitely being in the Trinity River. Being
Nice.
in the river, that's where I grew up. So it's a favorite spot. Stories from my mom's childhood, my childhood, and then sharing it with my kids is so special and beautiful. And that's my favorite thing. It's my
Nice.
favorite summer activity. Would you like to share with us? We're doing the icebreaker. What's your favorite summer activity?
Summer activity. It's tough. I like to travel in the summer. And then I do like recreation sports, play a little intramural flag football. So I do that when the weather is nice.
Does anybody have any announcements or general updates from the CLC? Where we're going?
I have one of those.
Yeah.
I'll wait for the
I don't have.
None. We're good. Okay. Go ahead,
Not
please.
CLC. Can I just go? So I just wanted to introduce Angela Wynn. She's a new staffer at Prosper Portland, and she's helping coordinate all the new TIF districts and colleagues. So you'll be seeing her. She's lovely. So, yeah, feel free to introduce yourself.
Okay. Thank you.
There's a flyer around the table right now for Cully Fest. This is a festival happening on September 13th. It's going to be Cully-centric. It's going to be a lot of fun. We might have a dunk tank. We might have a lot of fun stuff there, or we will have a lot of fun stuff there. But if you were at Cully Fest last year, it's probably going to be like 2 times bigger than that, hopefully. So it's such a great opportunity to come out and just have fun. Because we all need to feel a little bit of joy during the summer, especially now more than ever. And then the other update that I have is we actually have somebody in the room here. If I could ask Maria to come up to the table. Maria Grzanka is consulting with Living Colleagues to support the community engagement efforts. And I'll let her introduce herself and talk a little bit about what she's here to do. So thanks, Maria.
Hi, Maria Grzanka. I'm a Cully resident. I formerly chaired the Cully Association of Neighbors. And as part of that, I also served on the TIS BLC. So I know some of you from that work, some of you that aren't, some other members also from that work, and I'm looking forward to meeting and working with the rest of you. And I think, I don't know that we have an official name for it, but I'll be supporting the community engagement and public engagement work starting, I will know more specifics in the next couple of weeks, because the first thing I'm going to do is try to figure out what that plan is going to be over the next few months.
Yeah, and we'll come back at the next meeting with more concrete details around it. But for now, we just wanted you all to know the face because it's a face you're going to see a lot through this phase of the work. And so we're really happy to have Maria here, especially with the technical expertise that she brings and being a part of the Exploration Leadership Committee for the Cully Tip District work, which is what created this blueprint of the model for a community-led tip district. So it's a really good fit. And we're excited to see what it comes out to.
Yes. I should also mention, aside from that, the background right here, my regular day job is as a group facilitation leader in problem solving. So that's kind of, we're trying to marry up those things with some of the areas that I'm also interested in. Mm-hmm. Okay. I will let you get to work then.
Thank you.
You too.
And if you have any questions, let me know during the space or outside of the space. We're always happy to talk more. And then out of our corner eye, we also have Jesse back. Jesse, who y'all spent a lot of time with. Just another familiar face to have around. So thanks for the time, Ginger.
Awesome. Yay. We're so happy to see you again, Jesse. Welcome back. So our last meeting, we heard from Prosper staff. We went over the economic development programs and had some guests share some pretty powerful statements with us. And I think we do have time for a little break, but we kind of started late. How are you feeling? I think you guys feel like going through just because we didn't. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's move forward. Okay. Thank you. So then, awesome. Yeah, no break. Yeah. Yeah. So then, Leslie is PhD.
Yeah.
Get away.
All right. Sorry, my daughter just texted me about my grandson. Of course. So I did want to mention one thing. Just an offer that I wanted to put on the table to maybe help a little bit. I've been on Zoom the last few months, and I'll just speak for myself. It's very difficult when you're on Zoom with the way the room is set up and with the small mic. And so I wanted to make an offer for providing some additional technology assistance for the committee. So potentially maybe having open signal come, they could help with sound, more microphones. So everybody has a mic,
screen. So wherever we are, if we don't meet in the same place, they could record the meeting and put it on the website so other people would have opportunity to view it. And so you don't have to make a decision today, but I wanted to make that offer. We can think about it, and then potentially for July or August, we could start, we could have some additional technological features that will help particularly people that are not in the room,
yeah,
but also so the community can go back and watch the meetings a little easier and hear what's going on. So with that being said, some of you may remember these slides. These are the ones that Jesse used, and I just updated them. We get a lot of questions about what's affordable. What does affordable mean? And the legal definition of affordable is not necessarily what the general public considers to be affordable, because affordable is based on a definition of an AMI that's given to us by the federal government. And so they determine based on the incomes in a particular area, what the 100% AMI is, so area median income is for an area. And then we calculate what a 60% is, what 80% is, what 30% is based on what the federal government tells us. So in 2025, the AMI for Portland went up to almost $125,000 a year. That's 100% AMI for a family of four, which I didn't make that until I'd been working a long, 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 long time. And so you take 60% of that, and that tells you, you know, depending upon how many people are in your family, there's also that calculation. So it's not just one person making $125,000. That's based on a family of four. So we do have a calculator on our website if you've never seen it or used it, but you can go in, you can say how many people are in your family, how much money you make a year, and it will calculate what your AMI is. What we build for rental is 60% AMI, 60% and 30%. So if you make up to 30%, you can qualify for a certain level of unit. And if you make up to 60%, you can qualify for a certain level of unit. But if you make more than 60%, you generally make too much money to qualify what's considered affordable. And I'm putting that in air quotes because affordable is reaching market rate in a lot of areas of town. We currently build our units for 99 years of affordability, again, based on that federal designation of whatever the AMI is. And so we have the calculation there. So 60% AMI for 2025 is $74,460.
That's for a household of four, right?
Household of four at 60%. And a household of four at 80% is $99,000. So let's go on to next slide. So we currently do a number of different kinds of programs. And I wanted to talk about some of those. We do, currently we do single family home repair. So if you're an owner, you own your house, we will can give you up to $40,000 of a home repair loan that has no payments and no interest. And the only way you'd have to pay it back is if you sold your house before 15 years. And those loans are forgivable at the 15-year mark. So they are totally forgiven after 15 years. We assist people with becoming first-time home buyers, and we provide down payment assistance. And that's anywhere from $80,000 to $150,000, depending upon the funding source and what area of town you're in. And we base that amount on what the median home sales are in a particular area. We produce multifamily rental projects. So some of the ones in Cully, we have put money into to help build. We do what's called rehab and preservation of current regulated housing. So someone that, a building that already has a regulatory agreement on it, that they can apply for money, upgrade the building. And so we can provide money for that. We also do what's called acquisition and rehab, where we buy buildings that are being sold from the market that may be naturally occurring affordable. And we want to make sure that whoever buys it doesn't then turn around and raise the rent and kick everybody out. So that's what some of what we do. And then we don't do a lot of shelter and sanitation facilities, but that those are allowable expenses under TIF. All right, next slide. So some of the things that people have talked to us about is infill housing, so affordable infill, ADUs and duplexes and triplexes on a single lot, middle density housing, manufactured park stabilization, and loans or grants to single family owners who have manufactured structures. So these are all things that we don't currently do that we could potentially do. All right, next slide. So I talked a little bit about new homeowners. We currently support new homeowners in to purchase. We provide education and counseling across the city, variety of agencies, so NAIA, Hacienda, so the PCRI, who else am I missing?
Habitat.
Habitat only does it for folks that are going to buy through them. I'm sorry?
Latino Network.
Oh, yeah, Latino Network and Portland Housing Center. It's like I knew there was somebody big that I was missing. And so we fund a contract for them to provide counseling and education to anybody that walks through the door. So at one point I used Hacienda to get services. I'm clearly not Hispanic, but I was able to go in. I was able to get services. So you can go into any of those agencies and get education, counseling. You can get foreclosure prevention services, any of those services. And we fund those outside of TIF. So those are not TIF funded services, but they assist people in becoming homeowners with that they can utilize TIF dollars for their down payments. We are able to, so with TIF dollars and down payment assistance, I know I'm kind of jumping around, but things just keep popping into my head. There's a requirement with tax increment financing that 20% of whatever the award amount is, or up to 20%, goes to a home improvement. So if we give you $100,000 for down payment assistance, that's your award, $10,000 would go towards a home improvement. So if you're buying an older home that can fix the roof or replace your water heater or windows or any of those kinds of things. And if you're buying a new home, we generally look at, well, you can replace appliances, you can upgrade your cabinetry, you could change out the flooring. It's a little more difficult with new properties for the home improvement, but we've got a great construction team that can help you figure out what that would look like. And again, the down payment amount, we base that amount based on the home sales price in the area. So right now in Interstate, because the average sales price for a home is, I think, $520,000, just increased the down payment assistance beginning this year to $150,000. And 20,000, so up to $30,000 can go towards home improvement. They could use, they have to use at least 15, but they could go up to $30,000 to go towards improvements on the property. And it has to be things that are going to stay in the house. So it's not like buying furniture. You put on a deck, you can, you know, we've got to manage health and safety items first, but then anything that's going to be attached to the house, you can use that, those home improvement dollars for. For existing homeowners, we have both a home repair loan program and a home repair grant program. Home repair loans are based on the equity in your home. So you have to have at least the amount of equity in your home and for us to give you a loan. So generally loans are up to $40,000, but if you only had $25,000 worth of equity, we couldn't give you a $40,000 loan. So that's, and again, those are no payment, no interest, forgiven after 15 years. The down payment assistance, they begin being forgiven at 15 years. So it's a 30-year, no interest, no payment loan at 15 years, 50% is forgiven. And then 3% per year after that until 30 years. And then it's fully forgiven. So if you sell your house at year 18, then we would calculate whatever that amount is and reduce the amount that you'd have to pay PHB back. In the case where you own your you're buying your house, you have this down payment assistance loan, we do subordinate to a primary lender, and you've got an emergency that you need to take some equity out of your house. We would review that and make a determination like, oh, they need a new roof. So yeah, we're not gonna make them pay back this, whatever they owe us in order to fix the roof. So it's not a situation where anything that you do, you know, we're gonna make you pay back that $150,000 or whatever, however much it is, we will work with you so that you can take care of your emergency. If you've got medical issues or whatever, we can work through that. And we review those all the time and to help people stay in their homes. I talked a little bit about foreclosure prevention. We do fund that outside of TIF dollars. All right, next slide. And so these are programs that we do that again are paid for outside of tax increment financing, but they are available at the Bureau to support the programming that we're gonna put into the action plan. We have eviction legal defense. We have fair housing legal services. We do expungement clinics a couple times a year to help people if they have evictions on their record, if they have other kinds of criminal charges that are preventing them from getting an apartment. And so those are funded out of what we call our renter services office. And that's people who own apartment buildings pay a rental registration fee for each unit, any building that has more than 20 units. And then we use those fees to cover our renter services program. We have a help desk. We have a renter's rights hotline, landlord tenant information. So we work really hard to ensure that renters know what their rights are and to assist landlords with all of the rules and regulations around mandatory relocation and what the waivers are and who qualifies for what in relation to if somebody is a landlord. All right. Oh, and we also, this is one that we have that's just in interstate, but we could do it someplace else, do it in another district. We have we're calling a security deposit pilot. And we set aside a pot of money out of the renter services office to help people move into preference policy units. So up to $1,000. It can be used for moving trucks and boxes and childcare while they're moving, or paying a security deposit in the new building, or paying an old light bill in the old building so that they can get their lights turned on in the new building. And so we are piloting that right now. And so far, you know, it's going really well. So we will be evaluating whether or not we continue it and utilize it across all of our affordable housing portfolio. All right, next slide. So we also do new construction. I talked a little bit about that. We are a gap funder. And what that means is we will decide, we've got however many millions of dollars that we are going to put out in what's called a NOFA, and that's a notice of funding availability. And people apply for it and they say, hey, I need $3 million. I'm going to build 50 units. This is the AMI I'm going to go for, and these are the services. And those get reviewed by a committee and determine, okay, well, this is the best project, the best use of funds, highest and best use of the property, whatever that is. And then we award them dollars, and then those dollars are part of the funding stack for that particular building. And as I said, we've got several buildings around here that we've contributed to. And since I've been at the Bureau, I've been there 13 years. We build for renters at or below 60%. Sometimes we get project-based Section 8 vouchers from Home Forward to be included in projects. And 30% units, we sometimes can or designate 30% units as PFH. Long day, my tongue is getting twisted. PSH units, and those are for folks that have had experienced homelessness or have struggled to maintain housing, and they get additional wraparound services at dollars to help them stay in their apartments. And then we also have what's called a risk mitigation pool that we put money into every year for buildings that have PSH units. So if somebody moves in and they destroy the unit, or they tear it up, or they tear up the appliance, that landlord or that building owner can request funds from PHB to cover the costs of fixing, repairing any of the damage in that PSH unit so they can rent it back out. And I already talked about preservation and rehabilitation. And we also can purchase land for future development with TIF dollars. So in Interstate, which I'm gonna show you what the original action plan was for Interstate, we had a goal of land banking, and we purchased three pieces of land and then had one piece donated by Kaiser. Mm. All right, next slide. So these are some of the things that are up for discussion. And if any of these are you're interested in, we need to develop those programs out because we don't currently do these. And it would probably be something that we could do in year three as opposed to year one. Infill housing, that's ADUs and tiny houses, those kinds of things. We currently don't have a program for that. Manufactured home housing parks. We've done a little bit of work around those, but we don't have a program. So it would take us a little while to put that together. And then repair for manufactured homes. We don't currently do those, but we could. It would not take much. That's probably of the three, that would probably be the easiest thing for us to incorporate into our home repair program. Next slide. So this is the overview of what was in the North Northeast Housing Strategy Action Plan for housing. The first strategy was retention of current homeowners. And that those are home repair loans and grants. And to date, we've served about 1,300 households in 10 years with grants and loans. Creation of new homeowners. We have 127 folks that have become homeowners since 2015. And those are through a variety of ways. Some bought using down payment assistance. Some bought through Habitat for Humanity. So those were programmed, those were buildings that we put money into on the front end. And so they were able to sell them at a lower rate. And then we use federal funds that we can help people with down payment assistance. And that's a grant as opposed to a loan. Next slide. And then strategy three is creation of new rental units. We have, once we're all done, we'll have 877 rental units across Northeast Portland or across the Interstate District that we've used TIF, Metro Bond Funds, CET, and, or that's construction excise tax, and short-term rental in. But in all of those buildings have a requirement to use the North Northeast Preference Policy. And then strategy four was land banking. As I mentioned, we bought three pieces of property. One of them has a building that's open. It's been developed. The second one is in under construction. And the third one, I believe construction is going to start sometime next spring. So, and I do have, I did bring a copy if folks want to just flip through it. I didn't bring enough for everybody, but this is the 10-year report on interstate and the housing goals and what we've accomplished over 10 years. It is available on our website, and I can send out the electronic version if people are interested to see what, read about the oversight committee from Interstate and the things that we've accomplished and how much money we've spent. So by the time we get done with these last three projects, it'll be about $135 million going towards housing related items in 10 years. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question, and I'm gonna try to keep it quick, but the Interstate TIF district was not a community led.
It was not originally, but it became that in 2015. And we developed this action plan with an oversight committee, a community through a community process. We took about 7 months. We talked to about 600 people in putting this plan together. And so we've had an oversight committee that has led over 10 years and is chaired by Dr. Stephen Holt. We've had some turnover, but it has been a community led process since 2014 for both us and for Prosper. Prosper had what was originally a CDI, and now it's called the APLC, I think.
But I don't know. It was the Community Development Initiative with
right.
the FBI. I don't know what it
is. I think it's out. I know the initials are APLC, but I don't know what they stand for anymore. I know it's the last two are leadership something. Maybe it's Albina. I don't know. But so beginning, we, after the Trader Joe's, I don't know if you guys remember Trader Joe's when the city was going to sell property to Trader Joe's on Alberta, and that's where Natural Grocers is now. Prosper was going to sell that piece of land to the company that owns Trader Joe's for like, I don't know, 50 cents on the foot or something. I mean, it was way, way, way undervalued, and the community protested and said, no, you know, they were supposed to be housing. There's not been enough housing that has gone into Interstate as promised. There were all these plans that had been developed. And so the mayor at the time, Charlie Hales, awarded PHB $20 million. They took $20 million from Prosper and gave it to PHB for planning around housing to ensure that people who had been displaced or were at risk of displacement would have opportunity. And out of that planning process for that initial $20 million, we created this, this action plan. And over the last 10 years, it's grown from 20 million to now 135 million. So it didn't start out as a community-led plan, but it has been. And we did our presentation to City Council yesterday. And on the 10-year, just celebrated our 10-year anniversary in January. So I think that while you guys... your group was formed from the community. I think you could learn from the, there are a lot of things that have come out of ours that I think other groups can learn from, and the things not to do,
right,
and the things that have worked and the things that haven't worked. And so you'll be able to read through that. And again, I'll send you the electronic version. I have some hard copies. I don't know if I have enough, but somebody wants a hard copy, you can let me know. Yes, ma'am. Ms. Elizabeth.
I have a couple questions.
Sure.
So you were saying the forum, starting with the first slide.
Which slide?
The first one, the affordable housing relation to the PHB.
So this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a household of four earning 60% of. So let's say if that household is only one person working and bringing more money into the family, would it still be counting the 60%?
So it's based on your family size and your annual earnings. So if it's one person, so if your household size is four and you're making more than $74,000 a year, then you wouldn't qualify for a 60% unit. You'd be over income. But if you had five people in your household and you were making $74,000, you'd be under 60%. You'd probably be 55% or 50%. So it's a combination of how many people and the total earnings of anybody over the age of 18.
Okay, so let's say we're a family of five. Uh-huh. And it's only one person working, and then the mom is taking care of the children. How would that?
It's still based on whatever the annual earnings are for that one person, mm-hmm, and the number of people in the family.
Okay. Okay. And then another thing is you were talking that you guys working with different type of organization, mm-hmm, and everything, and I like that. But the only thing that I'm concerned in that the barriers that they put to people who don't have a Social Security, who have ITIN, like you were saying, like as Hispanic person, I feel like it's a lot of barriers for our community in that aspect of owning your own house, because it's always like, oh, you have the ITIN, and it's, we don't work with ITIN, or your loan is gonna be higher. And it's not a lot of explanation around that. So have you experienced anything like that when you guys were building?
I think Habitat does an amazing job of working with folks from all different kinds of backgrounds.
No.
Well, from my experience, I can't speak for everybody, but what I know and the people I know that have gone through the program, we do work with Hacienda, NEA, both programs that we contract with to do counseling, foreclosure prevention, homeownership programs. They get funds to help people become homeowners. And if that's one of the things that we need to work with them on, then, you know, that's one of the policy things that we should include in the action plan. It's like, how do we ensure that people that are that don't have a Social Security number that can become homeowners?
Yeah. Have you guys any experience on that type right now? Has it happening? Oh,
I don't manage the home ownership program, so I can't tell you the all of the specifics. I could have John or Ira, who's our in-house person, come and talk about any of those issues. I supervise the manager of the, and I'm now going to be working with you all on putting together your action plan. But if you like, if you look through that, our plan from Interstate, we had a lot of policy things that went along with the money.
Yeah.
So we had 4 money goals, and then we had goals around, we had like the preference policy, and we wanted to change screening criteria, and we wanted to ensure that there were renter services. And so there were a lot of things that we wrote into that initial plan that over the last 10 years, we've been able to put into place. And so at this group, if there's specific policy things that you would like to see us work on, then that we should look at how do we incorporate those into the action plan, even though there's no money attached to it. It does, all of the action plan doesn't have to be money. It could be other types of things that we're gonna work on with you all together.
Yeah, because our focus is that everybody can have access to this without barriers. And I love that you guys come in and sharing all this thing. It's great, but I feel that you guys never bring the barriers, what people go through when it's time to go to those places.
So I can tell you I'm not Hispanic. I can tell you that from the Black people that we've been working with through the North Northeast Housing Strategy have been some of the most displaced, adverse impact folks that started below zero to get to the place where they could buy. We just had a lady who started in 2015. She started home ownership counseling. She just became a homeowner this year. So 10 years of working through credit, income, debt to income ratio, all of the things that keep people of color, not just Black people, anybody that's got anything against them, criminal record, all of those things. And it took her 10 years, but she stuck with it and she was able to buy a house this year. So I'm not saying, you know, that it's going to be easy, but I think if we work together, we can figure out a way to ensure that people that are in Cully can buy houses in Cully if that's where they want to be.
Elizabeth and I have talked about this on the economic development side and some of the same barriers. And I just want to remind folks, in the district plan, there is a goal about reducing and eliminating barriers for priority communities. And I think like the barriers are different based on the community you're coming from, right? And so like, I think in this plan, to Leslie's point, we should name some of these things, but we should be specific. Like, I think the plan is really just like eliminate barriers, like,
right.
Hey, and yeah. So it's like, but like, what are those? Like, let's get down into it and start naming some of those things. Because they are different by different communities, and we have to kind of dig into that if we're gonna actually
totally breathe up. And Cecily, I didn't know if you still had yours up. You had I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Cecilia.
That's all right. I was just wondering, like, when I heard you talking about the new construction, talking about the loans and grants under TIF. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, everybody, but I thought TIF was only sticks and bricks and not like actual loan products. So is that something that you've done with the Interstate TIF that's policy change or no. What, or am I totally like not listing something here?
So we can use TIF dollars as a loan for somebody to buy a house, because that's sticks and bricks.
Okay.
If we give you a loan to do repair on your home, that's still sticks and bricks.
Okay, I get it.
So we're not giving people loans to buy cars.
Right.
We're giving them loans to either buy a house or fix up a house. And so that's how we're able. And because we use that 10 to 20% for home improvement, because there's a requirement under TIF regulations that there's some kind of improvement to the property, that's how we're able to do what we do, because we say, okay, we give you $100,000, at least $10,000 needs to go towards improving something on the property.
Right. Okay. I totally get that now.
Okay.
And I just have one more quick question is, can that also work with community land trusts like Proud Ground?
Yes. A couple of our projects are done between Habitat and Proud Ground together. Okay. Because Proud Ground is able to serve a little bit higher AMI than Habitat. And we've got a couple of projects. So Cary Boulevard, we bought from the Water Bureau. That's one of our land bank properties. And we're building 50 townhomes on that piece of property. So 50 new families. It's basically building a community out there.
Yeah.
And that's it's a Habitat Proud Ground collaboration. And so we're able to serve people up to 80% AMI. And then we've got a home ownership project that's gonna be at Williams and Russell, where they are using the down payment assistance model. So they're building new projects, and then the TIF money will come in on the backside when the person buys it, as opposed to with Habitat, we put the money into the construction, which helps buy down the cost of the unit.
Okay, thank you.
Right, yes, go ahead.
I really like the way you're explaining it, because I think it's opening up the committee's eyes to what the possibilities are when you are actually drafting the action plan. And so I heard you talk about, like, it's not just the actual dollar investments, but it can also be a policy that either goes hand in hand with an investment or no dollar at all. Could you give an example of, like, what a policy note could look like in the action plan, maybe something in the interstate one? Just that the committee can get an idea of, like, what a policy could look like in the Cully TIF District Action Plan.
So one of the things, and I'll just use the preference policy, because that was the biggest one. The recommendation was to develop a policy that ensured that people from that neighborhood had priority to the units that were being built. And that was, and then out of that, we formed another big committee. We had development partners. We had leasing people, property management companies, community folks, fair housing attorneys, and they came up with the preference policy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something, and it's geography based. It's not race based, so it's not had any challenges from HUD. We don't have a fair housing challenge yet. Is there any wood in here? I'm knock. We don't get one. HUD actually did list it as on their equity guidebook as a way to ensure that people were getting being treated fairly and having access after being displaced.
Yeah.
So I think that's the biggest one. We did end up having to put some money into it because we had to have staff and some other stuff, but that's done through general fund. It's not TIF dollars going into that. Again, some of the other things was screening. One of the other things, the big one was screening criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2015, it was huge that, you know, criminal background checks and all of the things that were keeping people from getting into rentals. And so we worked with, again, our attorneys, we worked with the state. The whole ban the box happened in like the mid 2015, 17, somewhere around in there. And just changing the way people were looking at screening criteria.
Mm-hmm.
We really wanted to go further than it has gone, and the committee keeps bringing it up. But that's where we are right now. So those are the two, I think, two of the biggest things that came out of that really were not money goals, but they were really around changing how we do business, changing how we impact community.
That's awesome.
All right, next slide. I don't know if I have any more.
Can I have this?
Yeah, you can have that copy.
I'm like one of those people that has to have something in my hand. I don't looking online. Yeah. But anybody else wants to look at it before I snatch it up? Before
it. And I, like I said, I do have some hard copies. If somebody, anybody else wants a hard copy, just you can email me and I will get one with your address. We can get one sent out to you, or I can bring it next month to the July meeting. Go ahead.
And I missed the beginning of the presentation, and so maybe I missed some information, and I'm pardon for that. But just curious, like, as I think about like it taking 10 years for somebody to kind of make it through the program, how secure is the funding for it to maintain for 10 years, sort of given like what we're up against, like as you were like, knock on wood, like, is this funding secure? And then if TIF invests in it, like, is it like,
well, how? So for us, we release a certain amount of money every year. So, and because we do our home ownership program under Interstate, is people have to be on the preference policy list. So we've had 3 rounds to get people onto the list. And so that particular person applied in 2015, and she'd been working and working and working. And so we've released funds every single year, and she just happened to get eligible right when we increased the down payment from, because when she started, it was 60,000 and now it's 150,000. Mm-hmm. And so we don't guarantee anybody funds if they go through the program. But in the case, if there hadn't been any money left, Portland Housing Center has other programs that they let people know what they're eligible for. She could be eligible for one of the townhomes that we're building out at Cary Boulevard. So she might not have been able to buy on the market, but would qualify to buy one of the developments we're doing. So we let people know. Most people want the down payment assistance because they want to go buy something on the market. You know, everybody has in their head that 3-bedroom, 2-bath house with the white picket fence and the garage and the driveway and the grass. And I think that's part of what we need to kind of change the mindset around: what does ownership mean? What does it do for you and for your family, for your kids, you know, to be able to pass something on, even if it's a, you know, it's a townhome that doesn't have a great big yard, but you got enough yard that you can put your barbecue out and you can, you know, do your water balloon fights and have a little blow up pool for your grandkids. Everybody's not going to be the same. And so I think that's one of the key issues that the oversight committee has really worked to change the mindset around home ownership. For some people, it might be buying a flat and not buying a house at all. Maybe it's buying a condo where they don't have to worry about doing the yard, where, you know, they've got their 3 bedrooms and 2 baths. It's all on one level. And, you know, they've got a postage stamp yard that somebody else is going to cut the grass. That's, you know, that's still home ownership. It's paying yourself, building equity for yourself, and not for somebody else.
It's creating intergenerational wealth.
Yes.
Is the way that we look at it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Sorry,
Sky.
Go ahead, Sky. Sorry.
I think it's a great segue to a question that I have. Leslie, I think that's really great. Like, I love, you know, the different types of home ownership, and just wanting to ask you a question about, like, it seems that PHB is only funding single family home ownership and sort of a large affordable rental properties. What would it take, or what would it look like for us to actually move to what you're describing and some of that, you know, middle infill or different types of home ownership opportunities?
Well, we have funded 2 buildings with Habitat where they were flats. One is on Kenton and one is on Olin. So they are buildings that the one on Olin, I think, is 12 flats in a little U with a courtyard in the middle. And then Kenton is 2 buildings. I think it's 36 units total that were all flats that we sold primarily to preference policy buyers. So that's a different kind of home ownership program. We found that with the population that we were serving in Interstate, and because of the preference policy, most people were looking for either a single family house or at least a townhouse, not a flat. And so we worked with Habitat to have them do something more in line with what that population was looking for. We, you know, if we have, if there's land in Cully and we wanted to, you all decided we want to do a 6-story condo building for sale, and we put that out in a NOFA, it's like, we've got the property, we've got the money, and somebody applies and says, yep, we can build it. This is how much it's going to cost per unit. This is what we're going to sell them for. We could do that now. The ADU program, some of those other things, it would take us a little while because we tried an ADU, we started to do an ADU program back in 2016. We had some money from Prosper. They gave us $1.8 million to develop a pilot. And there were just so many constraints around doing an ADU program where it was affordable. So if somebody builds an ADU in their on their property, it has to be affordable. It can't be more than 80% or 60% if they're renting it out. You know, they have to qualify at less than 80% for the loan. And so it just got to be very complicated, the tax implications, particularly for seniors. And so we just needed more time to think through all of the financial implications to put an ADU on your property that's now going to be affordable for at least 15 years, because that was the regulatory agreement we were looking at. And so again, if that's something that this committee wants to look at, we can, you know, we can start developing that, but it's probably going to take us at least till year 3.
Can you remind
me? So,
ADU.
Yes, accessory dwelling unit. And the program we looked at was in basements, but we have seen where people have converted garages or built them on there in their backyards or whatever. Because the basement was going to be the least expensive, was doing a basement conversion versus doing building a new building. But yeah, if that's something that you guys decide, you prioritize that, that that's one of the things that you really want, it would take us a couple years to get something like that off the ground.
And just how about like, you know, more like, 2 to 10 unit. Is that something that PHB has looked into?
We, not through Interstate, we haven't done a lot of that, but we do have some older projects that are duplexes, triplexes. We've got, you know, less than 20, smaller buildings that are less than 20. We haven't done a lot of those because it's really hard for folks to meet the regulatory requirements and to for them to make any money and be able to cover the maintenance. So again, it's not something that we couldn't do. It's just we'd have to really think about, again, a small developer or a couple building a 20 units and what all of the pieces, all of the implications are for them to maintain affordability for a long time. And that if currently it's 99 years on any rentals. And, you know, that means that they leave it to their kids are now responsible, their grandkids are now responsible for whatever that is. If they sell it, whoever they sell it to have to maintain that affordability. So it's a bigger discussion. It's not impossible, but it would take a larger discussion around something like that.
Yeah. And is there any way that, you know, through this process, if we wanted to look into that more, we could? It's very unfortunate. It's like what I'm hearing is that the regulatory burden and administrative piece is just so cumbersome and challenging that we can't offer up, or like PHB funding sort of can't.
I'm not saying we can't. because we have done it in the past.
Sure, but like not anymore. And like how could we like lower those barriers for folks to offer up different types of and make it easier so it's not just, you know, large apartment rentals and down payment assistance.
So Sky, I am not the expert. I'm gonna be real transparent. And I know enough to be dangerous. if that's something that the committee thinks should be available in Cully, then I think that that's a policy recommendation that you all should include, saying that in year five, because that's really when we're going to have more money available to do more large scale kind of development, that you want to be able to look at affordable rental in for buildings less than, you know, 20 or, you know, 25 or less units. And then we, you know, figure out how to make it work. I'm just saying right now, I don't know how we would do that, but then I'm not the expert. I'm not on the development team. I don't manage the development team. I know enough to be dangerous. So I could tell you anything.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I'm just like trying to understand more. And like, you know, I just want, right, I think housing is such an issue, and, you know, with affordability, and it's like, how can we just create more housing, period? And just to like lower all, you know, funding just requirements, and just like, let's build more housing in general. You know, they don't need to be these large, huge projects, but, you know, how can we even activate more community members or local small developers to, you know, start adding some affordable units?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And we actually had a presentation today on social housing models. Our director has been working with Indiana and looking at different social housing models which aren't restricted to the same kinds of things when you're doing a LIHTC deal. So part of the reason why we build bigger units, big buildings, is because, you know,
price per square foot.
Well, not the, no, it's the code, building code, and where the property is and what the requirements are, and trying to build to the highest, best use. So we get, sometimes they're like, nope, you gotta, you know, do all of the floor area ratio. So you can go up to 6 feet or 60, six floors, you need to build to six floors. And of course, then there's all the legal requirements that go along with LIHTC deals. And so we're going to be looking at, over the next year, studying how we can do affordable housing differently and not just do LIHTC deals, and hopefully release some of that pressure around having to do big buildings. But again, I think that if that's a desire of this group, is to look at those kinds of things, then you should include it. And then that's our job to figure out how to make it work or come back and say it's not possible.
Okay, before we get, Laura is online. She's got her hand up for a minute. So Laura, did you want to come off mute?
You're still muted.
Hello.
Okay.
Hi. I've been having this one question. I don't really know how to phrase it, but back in the 70s, they used to have something known as single room occupancies. I don't know if nobody's old enough to remember that, but I've been just thinking in terms of senior housing. A lot of us been talking about, well, maybe that was a good idea. I mean, it's almost like living in the dorms. But, you know, you'd have to downsize a lot of stuff, but it might be, if you're on a fixed income and they get rid of Social Security, you might be having to look at something that's dirt cheap.
Yeah, we do have a couple of SROs that we built since I've been at the Bureau. One of them is the, it was a hotel right by the Moda Center.
Yeah.
That got converted. That's a SRO, and that's run. Lindsay, is that Transition Projects or? It's
Transition or Central City.
Central City. Yeah, so we do that, but those are primarily for folks coming out of homelessness. We haven't really done any senior model work for seniors. We are building a senior building on Interstate, so right near Kaiser. That's on the property that was donated to us by Kaiser Permanente, and it'll be studios and one bedrooms for folks over 55, which still kills me because I'm 59 and I'm like, I don't think of myself as being a senior, but that being said, we do have buildings across our portfolio that are for primarily for seniors. So, and they studios are tough because right now at 60%, depending upon where you are, they are right at market. And so really trying to figure out how do you bring down those rents when they're the 60% rent is the same as, you know, you could go someplace else and not have to jump through 42 hoops to get into it because it's not an affordable building. So
before you go to the next question, I just wanted to acknowledge it's 25 minutes after and that's where you're.
Oh yeah, we got to do our, so let me answer your question. And then if Jesse, if you want to pass out the,
So the down payment assistance to purchase, I couldn't remember, can those buyers buy duplexes, triplexes, and quads? Because there's under four units is still considered residential, not commercial. But can you buy, can they buy duplexes or do they have to stick with single family home when they get that 150K?
The current requirements are it's a single family first home purchase.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But again, it's not, that's not to say that we couldn't look at doing something differently. If there's a plethora of those available in Cully for purchase or for sale, whether or not that is something that we want to look at doing.
Yeah, because it could help with, as far as their mortgage goes, because some of these complexes are priced the same as single family homes.
Right.
And if they lived in one unit and able to rent out the other one,
It'd be similar to the infill thing or an ADU project where somebody bought a duplex and they live in one and they rent out the other one. So again, I'm not saying, you know, we don't currently do it, but it's not that we can't. It's just we'd have to figure out how to make it work. All right. So what has been so this is our priority exercise. And thank you, dear. And what I would like you to do, this is a fourth ranking. So you have to rank each one in order of what you think should be the priority of the committee. And so 1 through 7. So 1 is your highest priority and 7 is your lowest. And then if you've got any additional feedback at the bottom, let me know. So that's how we're going to start working on developing your action, your housing action plan portion.
And land banking is like vacant land?
Land banking is purchasing land now to develop later.
Yep.
Here.
Oh, thank you. Elise, did you say it was fillable?
Yes.
Please ask questions.
A regular pen.
I know. Oh God, I have some.
Love it.
Who needs a pen? Okay.
Oh,
appreciate it.
Here.
There we go.
Thank you.
Okay. Give me a second.
And folks online, this did come out to you, and it is a fillable form, so you can just type into it and then just email it back.
And if you're having trouble accessing it, please let us know right now.
Yes.
We can help you. And you can either screenshot it when you're done or download it as a PDF and email it to any one of us and we'll make sure your thing is recorded.
Current homeowner repeaters, that would be homeowner retention.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so all the definitions, homeowner retention is current homeowners, home repair, homeowner creation, that's basically either down payment assistance or building new homeownership units. Rental retention, it would be rent repairs on rentals. We don't currently do those, but again, that'd be something that we could do probably without much difficulty. New rental creation, so that would be anything from the big buildings to smaller 20 unit buildings, land banking, of course, buying land now to use later. And then mobile home park support could be anything from home repairs to down payment assistance to, you know, anything in that realm. So
Leslie, what is rental retention, or what is that?
That would be doing repairs on okay. rentals. Got it.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment. I live here in Coley. I just live on 56 and Killingsworth, which was a habitat complex of 15 units, but three of those units were, I don't know how the language would be, but three of those were Proud Ground homes. So I bought under Proud Ground.
Yes.
And I mean, it's not.
So you're in the Coley Place. Oh yeah, we had three preference policy folks buy down there.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at.
Okay.
And I bought, I want to say 2020.
Yeah.
And for me, that was affordable. I had to change, again, my perspective on what I consider homeownership. Mm-hmm. And I can say that that journey took me all the way from, I want to say, 2015, late 2015 till I signed the papers in April of 2020.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. And actually I got the LIFT funds
mm-hmm.
that I had to stand in line for at the Expo Center
mm-hmm.
at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And there was like only 50 people that were, you had to be pre-qualified and you had to have your mortgage readiness all in place. And I was number, while they did over 50, I was number 51.
Mm. Wow.
And that's how I qualified to get into my home, was with that $20,000 down payment assistance. But I was sitting at Expo Center at 4 o'clock in the morning with a number of other people that wanted the same funding.
Well, I bought my house in 1995 through a very similar program, Northeast Community Development Corporation, and I got a $15,000 Nehemiah grant. So that's way, 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 way before Lyft and everything else. And I've been in my house 30 years, raised my kids there, little bitty house, you know, I'm on a 5,000 square foot lot, but you know, if I sold it, I couldn't buy another house in my neighborhood because they're so expensive.
Exactly. And I'm just saying that I'm thinking like, okay, you think affordable housing, it seems like possible for Coley TIF to do something like that,
mm-hmm.
to make it affordable for other families to get in there.
Yep.
If we can match it with like down payment or whatever, I mean, yeah, because without that, I wouldn't have been able to purchase in Portland, anywhere in Portland. And I never had, I live all my life on a Native reservation. So like homeownership was possible because my family's built their homes from the ground up,
mm-hmm.
you know? So like, that was kind of like my dream to have a little garden and all that. But, you know, once I moved to the city and here in Portland, it was like impossible. But now I can have, you know, I have intergenerational wealth. I can give that to my daughter,
yeah. mm-hmm.
or to my grandkids,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, whereas before, it was completely different. I had to change that mindset, what you were talking about, you know, and think, okay, well, yeah, this is something that I can afford. And I actually worked at Nail. I still work at Nail, but I went through the home ownership program there. And I just had a really good mentor and a really good counselor. And there was times when I thought it was never going to be possible. But that's why I tell people, don't give up.
Yep, that's exactly right. You get somebody that's in your corner and helps you. And, you know, now whenever I talk to anybody, I'm like, look, we just made a lady a homeowner that 10 years,
yeah.
10 years she's been working. And if she can do it, you can do it. Because she started like with a 2 credit score.
Oh, yeah. I started from the ashes. I'm like a phoenix. It just was happening that way with the forest and everything, you know, it was not in my name. And I basically started from ground zero, where I wasn't on anybody's radar. I couldn't even get a account at a bank. And where I finally was able to get an account was when I went to the home ownership fair at NAA. It was at that time, I can't even remember, it was a small credit union was there. And they said, oh, we can give you an account. You have a job now. And I'm like, what? So,
yeah.
Like, you know, I didn't even have that. So a lot of people are way ahead of me in that area, our bank, you know, but it's just education is a lot of it, too.
It is.
And again, like you said, changing that mindset to sometimes of what is affordable and what can we do. But I am so... you know, just being able to prioritize this makes me really, really happy.
So if you're done, you want to pass those down to me. And then when I come back in July, Catherine and I will present something for you guys to respond to.
Put our name on it.
You don't, if you want to put your name on, you can. If you don't, that's fine too, because I just need what you want prioritized.
Has over half of the trail, but
Yes. You want to put your name on it?
Sure.
You don't have to. Talk.
I'm still advocating for the mobile home park, though. Since we have over half in Cully.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Thanks.
And the folks online, were you all able to fill out the form?
Ready? Sorry.
I will need to send mine in a little later.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not going to look at it tonight. So
we're going to make sure that we screen yours when it comes in, Scott.
I'm like, I could just shout mine out right now.
I'll put mine in the chat. So.
Oh, so okay. Somebody put theirs in the chat.
Gary.
Oh, thanks, Gary.
I'll save it.
I sent it in.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I think that's my last slide, is Sureka. Well, so that's my last slide. Thank you so much for all the great questions and everything today. I'm excited to work with you guys on developing this action plan and seeing it come to fruition and starting spending some money next year on fall. After July,
right?
After we get a plan, my head is fiscal year, not calendar year. And so I think it's, you know, we want to be sure that we do what the folks want and not do things the way the city used to do them and just decide what we are going to give people and not what they might need. So
thanks, Leslie.
You're very welcome.
So I think so next month, as Leslie said, we're going to kind of bring some of this stuff together. So there's going to be kind of some of the housing priorities and the different programs under each. We have the kind of economic development priorities. Thanks for everyone who sent feedback on those. I will get those, the kind of priority language drafts and kind of the programs under each of those. I'll get those out by the end of next week. So folks have some time to look at them ahead of the July meeting. But I think at the next meeting, we're really going to start playing with kind of like where do we want to put those dollars? And just a reminder on that, the way it's kind of set up, and we'll use actual dollars, but 45% for affordable housing, minimum 45% for ACDEV, and that 10% can go where we want it to go. So there's that swing money too. So next month is all about dollars.
What was the second 45% you said, Kathleen?
So ACDEV and housing are each 45%.
And okay, what's ECDEV?
Economic development.
Okay, thank you. I was like, what am I not missing?
All the stuff from us. Yeah.
Awesome. And then are the people that weren't online tonight, do they still get a chance to fill this out?
Yeah, we send it out to everybody.
Oh, okay. Okay, you did say that.
But if you could send out an email, say, hey, if you weren't at the meeting, they could send those over to you or to me so everybody gets a chance.
Yeah, well, we won't move forward until we hear from everybody.
Yes. I will start calculating, but I will finalize it till we know for sure that everybody's had a chance.
Awesome. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's been a joy.
Yeah. We're going to move into public comment.
My name is Aaron Anderson, and not really speaking on ownerships of house. We're talking about the businesses and the cutting industry. I know you guys spoke on that last month. I wasn't able to make it right, but we could sure need some help. You know, me, myself, the owner of 42nd Ave Fishing Ship, we burned down August 18th last year. Right? And through the 42nd Ave, the landlords, you know, they hooked us up with a building right up the street. Right? But we could do, I mean, we really need some help. Need some help with the businesses. I've been sitting over here for like 9 months and bills, you know, I haven't got approved by the city. We just got approved by the city. So we should open up August 1st. But if I add a little help, you know, probably wouldn't open up. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Next on public comment, we have Annette.
Hi, good evening. I wanted to state that I'm speaking on my own behalf. Full disclosure, I'm staff with Habitat for Humanity, but foremost, I'm a Cali resident. And I wanted to just we heard the telling and test. You know, insight about the length of time it takes for people to get prepared to be in a ready position. And my plea to the committee and within your capacity, as you like share out with the greater community what is happening here, that there's ways to share this knowledge about the importance of like readiness, small steps now, to get you to a place in the future. I similarly have a story, the same thing, where I took a budgeting class at Portland Housing Center because I needed adult interaction as a solo parent with the baby. Little did I find out that, like, after taking that class randomly, it was a sticking point that made me eligible for the IDA. Right, which is like $1 down, $3 into, which helped with the closing costs of my affordable home ownership opportunity here in Colorado neighborhood. So I want to emphasize for the community to really hear three stories, you know, and where people can end up, meaning 13 years of housing at the Portland Housing Bureau. You know, for you, long-term stability here, working with NAIA and engaging the community. So I just stressing, think of the community members who don't know, they're not there yet, to find ways to send this information out, to make it a priority, because it takes a long time. And it takes a lot of just support. So sharing our stories is really important, and I hope you do so. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we have Charles.
I am a architect and designer, and I live up the hill just next to Kelly. And you are doing such amazing work. I consult internationally on building consensus with communities about making neighborhoods that are sustainable internationally, and where else than to prototype, see how you're doing it in my neighborhood. And so I can walk, I can see what you're doing, and I'm appreciating what you all are doing. And I'm learning a lot. And thanks for letting me in the space, though I didn't ask permission. But I've been coming to these with Luis over the last couple months and finding out stuff about myself and other communities that work.
Thank you, Charles. Is there any more? That's all we have on our list for public comments. I think we're yes. So, does anyone else have anything? Wow, we're great on time. Are we good, Catherine?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
I have one more thing. I don't know if we talked about it on a chair meeting, but I met with Dr. Holt today about the facilitation training for the co-chairs and for, I don't know, Luis, if you were interested, Catherine, if you were interested, but I sent an email over to Amy today with 4 dates in July that he's available to provide some facilitation training and conflict management. You know, we all have our moments where folks can bump heads, we don't agree. And he has provided the training to probably 70% of the staff at PHB, and folks feel way more confident going into meetings and facilitating conversations. So just wanted to let you know, Ginger and Catherine and Luis, that we do have some dates. Send it over to Amy, and we're splitting the cost. We could take, I think, up to 18 people. So
cool.
Yeah, just let Catherine know, and we'll get you all into that, because it'll be before we have our next meeting. So I wanted to make sure folks are aware.
I just wanted to, I have a comment on what you talked about earlier at the beginning on how maybe we can have our meetings be more available to
community.
I think that we should think about that, because, you know, that is one of our priorities, is, you know, getting more of the community to come in and attend meetings, or at least find out what we're doing in Cully. So I think any way that we can do that would be to our benefit, you know, because we can't always be everywhere at all the time. But if it's a way to be able to draw in more community members, I think we should really consider ways to do that.
Awesome. Thanks for bringing that forward, Leslie.
Oh, you're very welcome. And you can look on PHB's website under North Northeast Housing Strategy, and we have all of their meetings for, I don't know, 8 years, 9 years, something like that, have been recorded, all of the materials from each meeting. So you can watch any of the meetings. We do them on Zoom as well, so people can be live, but you can also go back and watch any meeting. And it's really made a difference for people to be able to go back and see, see what happened at a meeting. It's different than, you know, being on Zoom or reading notes, minutes. The other thing that we do that we could collaborate on, we do a newsletter for North Northeast once a quarter, where we talk about what's going, you know, new things, you know, Cully Fest, you know, whatever those things are that are going on in Cully, that I have a communications team that could come and assist with that. Prosper's got a great communications team as well that we could collab on. So just some other ideas about how to reach people in the community and let them know what you guys are working on.
Awesome. Thank you. So with Cecilia bringing that back for us to consider, will you or would Catherine have more information on how to go about that? The technology and things that you had mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, you guys just need to let me know what you want. We use Open Signal and they come in and they bring microphones and there's a camera. So when you do Zoom, they can see the room and you can see who's talking. If you look at our meeting at the North Northeast meetings, it will help you see what I'm talking about. I can just arrange for it. If you guys want to wait till the next meeting to decide when you've got, you know, more people, and then we could start it in August or September.
And there's additional costs with that.
I'll cover it out of my budget.
That's what I was going to say. Is that something we can do? Or
they'll cover it.
I'm going to cover it out of my budget.
Yeah.
Is Open Signal a company or is that a
Open
software?
Open Signal is the community media center that's on MLK, and they do all city council meetings and we use them for North Northeast, and they've been a great partner.
I like drive past that all the time, and so cool.
they're a great partner. So they've definitely helped us get the word out about what the oversight committee is doing in North Northeast.
Yeah, it's also come up from our community members, like, do we have a landing page? And yes, it exists, but like, it's been really hard to get to for even people who are looking for it, right? And having materials that are in Spanish and in English, and just kind of thinking about like the Coley Farmers Market that's coming up or the Coley Fest, and like, how do we have something that feels really accessible to the community when they first go to be able to want to join these meetings without.
One of the other things that when you have Coley Fest or other events that work for us for Northeast, was every event that we went to, we had people sign up for the mail list.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have, I don't know, like 7,000 people on our email list. No, that's over 10 years. But every time somebody comes to a meeting and they sign in, we ask them if they want to be on our email list. And so we send out email blasts, the newsletter, when NOFAs are happening, or, you know, we're opening a new building, we're doing a groundbreaking, we send it out to folks so that they know, hey, you can come, this is open to the public. Or, you know, when our budget was up in the air, everybody's budget was up in the air. It's like, come and testify, come and hear what's going on with city council's budget. So there are, you know, some things that we can do that technology and newsletters, that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Okay, that sounds lovely. We might add that in the email for the rest of our committee to kind of consider.
Yeah,
before we make a decision. And I just want to say thank you, Aaron and Annette and Charles, for your input. And we definitely had a good one on businesses last month. So you coming in just adds to that whole reminder of those conversations and the importance of having funding for that. So thank you. So next meeting, we're going to talk about specific allocations, types of tools, and the 10% flexible allocation amounts. And I think, Leslie, you'll email out the digital of the oversight committee.
I can send out the digital copy.
Okay, yep. Cool.
Or I'll send it to Luis. He's got the email. Send it to him and he can send it out.
That would be perfect.
Yeah. And if anybody wants a hard copy mailed to you, just email him and let whatever your address is and we'll do one mailed out.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, guys.
We'll be here next.
And we will be here in this location again next meeting. Okay.
Good, Bruce.
Awesome.
This one in.
We're good to go.
Thank you, everybody.
And when I first put it into my car, to my GPS, it said